3. HMS Armach 58, Markovian Sea. High Admiral Brian Lock Island stood pondering the chart on his table. Brilliant sunshine reflections danced across the cabin's beams and deckhead, bouncing in through HMS Armach's stern windows. They glittered and flashed in the hearts of the crystal paperweights anchoring the chart's corners, and his brass dividers gleamed like tarnished gold where they lay across the heart of the Markovian Sea. Armach's estimated position was indicated on that chart, 800 miles northeast of Hammer Island and 360 miles southwest of Salikar's Point. In actual fact, as Lock Island knew, that estimated position was almost exactly correct. And as he also knew, courtesy of Owl, the reports from his schooners 30 miles farther north were also accurate, if somewhat incomplete. He leaned forward, bracing himself on the table, trapping his position and the enemy's between the index fingers and thumbs of his two hands.
"Right about where you expected them," he thought. "Well, actually, be honest, you didn't really expect them to come this close to keeping their schedule, did you?"
He pursed his lips, considering what he knew of the opposing commanders. He knew quite a lot, actually, given Owl's remotes. The commanding officer of the Temple Lands-built contingent and the overall commander of the entire force was Bishop Cornelis Harper of the Order of Chihiro, who'd been named Admiral General of the Church's Navy. Of course, the Church had never had a navy before, and Harper had no experience commanding warships. He did, however, have extensive peacetime experience in the Temple Guard, and despite his silver hair, he was also relatively young, little more than 50, and vigorous. Smart, too, from everything Lock Island had been able to see. That was unfortunate. And so was the fact that he was obviously a Temple hardliner. Fortunately, no one in the Temple had any idea of the sort of staff arrangements towards which Earl Thirsk was working, but the men responsible for planning the organization of the newly christened Navy of God clearly possessed working brains. They divided their galleon strength into 6-ship squadrons, each under the command of a senior prelate with guard experience, and then assigned each Admiral Bishop a flag captain from the Church's Coast Guard, Customs, and Courier Service. That experience wasn't remotely the same as commanding a warship in action, but it meant each of the bishops at least had an advisor with an understanding of the limitations on a ship's maneuverability. Bishop Cornelis's flag captain was Father Arnold Tybald, the Schulerite upper priest who commanded NGS Sword of God, Harper's flagship. He was 10 years younger than his admiral, and even more energetic. Dark-haired and dark-eyed, he was anything but a fool, and he'd spent close to 20 years in the Church's Coast Guard. The two of them got along well, another unfortunate thing from Lock Island's perspective, and even worse, Tybald knew Harper was not only willing to listen to his advice, but expected him to volunteer it.
"They're going to make mistakes," Lock Island mused, "but they won't be stupid mistakes. Not like the ones Malachi made at Rock Point. No, they'll be inexperienced mistakes. The sort smart people make when they have to do something they're not really trained to do. I'm going to have to keep that in mind."
The Harchong contingent, on the other hand, had a far more satisfactory command structure. Lock Island found the Imperial Harchongese Navy's rank titles a little ridiculous, but that was probably to be expected from a force that was, technically, the largest navy in the world, yet kept fewer ships in commission than Coruscant alone. Of course, they'd always maintained an officer corps big enough to command all of the ships they didn't have in commission as well. Worse, once a man earned the equivalent of captain's rank, all promotion in the IHN was based solely on seniority. As a consequence, the senior officer afloat was one Chintai Shao, the Duke of Sun Rising, who rejoiced in the title of Admiral of the Broad Oceans. A cousin of Emperor Waisu, he'd served, officially, in the IHN since 2 years before his actual birth. That, coupled with the appropriate bribes and the inherent corruption of all things Harchongese, had gotten him commissioned a captain of winds the month he turned 16. Of course, he'd never actually set foot on a naval vessel until he was 21, but that sort of subterfuge was standard in Harchong, probably because it was the only way for anyone to attain flag rank when he was still at least theoretically young and vigorous enough to do some good. Admiral of the Broad Ocean Sun Rising flew his streamer in IHNS Flower of Waters. He was currently 75 years old, his health was poor, and he tended to go off on long rambling discourses at captains' conferences. No one would have dared say anything of the sort, not in Harchong, yet Lock Island knew at least some of Sun Rising's subordinates realized he was the wrong man in the wrong place. Unfortunately for them, he probably came the closest to being the right man of anyone of the appropriate seniority. Besides, his towering birth made him the only possible candidate for such a prestigious and important command. Captain of Winds Shukan Kausen, who commanded Sun Rising's flagship, was rather a different sort. Obviously, he had to be oppressively well-born to hold his current command, and although his own title was simply that of the Count of Wind Mountain, he was also the second son of the Duke of Dancing Water. And the Duke of Dancing Water, like every other Harchongese duke, was one of the Emperor's cousins. That was about the sole point of similarity between Wind Mountain and Sun Rising, however. The Captain of Winds was 20 years younger than the Admiral of the Broad Oceans, and there was nothing wrong with his brain. He had far less experience than a Carizian officer chosen for his position would have had, but he was more experienced than just about anyone else the IHN might have chosen. Fortunately, his father and Sun Rising detested one another, which meant his relations with his admiral weren't remotely like the mutual respect which flourished between Harper and Tybalt. Icily correct was probably the best way to describe them, which suited Brian Lock Island just fine.